and welcome to another episode of the Collapsing Game Shelf Podcast, a podcast by a group of archaeologists with way too many board games. I'm Tom, and I'm joined by...
Justin.
Adam.
And Debbie.
And today we are discussing our playthrough of Forbidden Desert, which we played on the old tabletop simulator. It's a game from 2013, is that... Is that right?
2013 is correct.
That is correct.
Wow, nailed it. A game from 2013 by the designer Matt Leacock, who you may remember from such games as Forbidden Island, which is the first game in this sort of series I think he's got going, as well as a little game called Pandemic.
Very prolific designer doing Pandemic and... Well, all the pandemics, like let's be realistic here, right? He's also done, I mean, some maybe less notable stuff like Chariot Race, the Era series, I should say, the Forbidden series, which includes Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert, Forbidden Sky, Nitwit, which is a lovely game. Nice.
Oh, yeah, Nitwit, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Anything else that's super notable?
If anyone's really interested, they can go look his ass up on Board Game Geek, like what I'm doing right now.
Roll Through the Ages is a very good Matt Leacock game. Very good.
I thought that was a computer game.
Well, there's a board game element, oh. I suppose.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I know nothing.
I just remember the video game with the giant moon. Maybe that's Rock of Ages.
That's Rock of Ages.
All right.
Cutting minute 3 to 4. Yeah, so as we found out, we played this on Tabletop Simulator, and as we just found out, no one actually owns this game. I own the original Forbidden Island, but I don't actually own Forbidden Desert, so I can't read you the back of the box.
Yeah, I've bought this for people. But I looked around and I don't own it either, but I probably bought in 3 copies of it.
You're getting out there and really spreading your board game seed.
Wow.
Brody.
So I have to default to the Board Game Geek for the notes from the publisher for what's going on here. So here we go. Gear up for a thrilling adventure to recover a legendary flying machine buried deep in the ruins of an ancient desert city. You'll need to coordinate with your teammates and use every available resource if you hope to survive the scorching heat and relentless sandstorm. Find the flying machine and escape before you all become permanent artifacts of the Forbidden Desert. In Forbidden Desert, a thematic sequel to Forbidden Island, players take on the roles of brave adventurers who must throw caution to the wind and survive both blistering heat and blustering sand in order to recover a legendary flying machine buried under an ancient desert city. While featuring cooperative gameplay similar to Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert is a fresh new game based around an innovative set of mechanisms such as an ever-shifting board, individual resource management, and a unique method for locating the flying machine parts. And below that, it's won a shitload of awards. Maybe go check out the Board Game Geek if you're interested. But as the blurb said, this is a co-op game for 2 to 5 players. It says that it plays in about 45 minutes, and it's pretty good for, people 8 and up, I think, is what it says here. And it's not overly complicated, which is nice.
It's nice.
I think the only complication we found was of my own design.
But it happens.
Jumping into how this bad boy works, you're going to have a bunch of tiles that represent the desert that you are searching for this flying machine. The tiles have various things on them, like, they got like ruins on them because you're digging in an ancient city. They'll have markings on them to tell you whether you need to pick up tools and whether there are maps to the pieces that you're looking for, as well as some of the areas are oases, and one of them is a mirage. So that's the douchebag square where you go and try to look for water and there is nothing there. The game is based on these tiles where there's like you leave a space in the middle. That is where you're going to be. That is because there's going to be a lot of shuffling around going on. You set it up in a 5x5 grid with a space in the middle. You're going to put these like little sand tokens on a few of the squares to represent the ever shifting sands covering everything up. And then you're going to plonk your dudes down on the space where you enter from. Everyone is going to pick one of the How many characters are there? Like six? There's like six different characters?
There are six, yes.
So there's like six different characters or so. Everyone is going to start the game by picking one of the six characters. You have such adventures available to you as the climber, the archaeologist, the meteorologist, and the water bearer, which I think are some of the ones that we played with. Each of your characters is going to have a unique ability to them in a similar way as Pandemic, and everyone's going to get plonked down on the starting space. During your turn, you have four actions, just like Pandemic, where you can move to adjacent squares, you can dig up the sand, and if the square that you're on happens to not have any more sand on it, you can then excavate it, which lets you flip the tile over and either get the piece that is underneath it, or the tool, or get half of the location of where the pieces are, or, you know, the water. What else can you do? You can pick up pieces. I think those are more or less the actions. At any time during your turn, and not part of an action, you can give water to people, which is important because everyone has a water meter, which as you go along the game will slowly deplete your water. And if you hit no water, you die.
Just like in real life.
Yeah. Like most co-op games, there are many ways to lose. One of which is the aforementioned dying of thirst. If you run out of sand dune tiles, which I'll explain in a minute. And I think the storm meter can just like get super high, I think is the other thing.
Yeah, if it reaches the top, you lose.
Yeah. So at the end of each player's turn, after you're done moving your guy around, digging up sand and flipping tiles over and maybe chugging water, there's a deck off to the side which has been shuffled and it's got various things in it. So it's got cards that represent the tiles moving. So when you flip over one of the cards that say, like, move this thing to the left, you move some of the tiles. And for every tile that you move, they get more sand dumped on them. There's also the sun beats down card, which means that anybody who is not hanging out inside of a tunnel or has some sort of item available to them will lose one water because it is super fucking hot. As well as there is the
storm rages.
And this one basically corresponds to this meter that's off to the side, which slowly or quickly climbs up and tells you how many cards to flip. So as you go along, the storm gets deadlier and deadlier and starts moving more and more stuff around, piling more and more sand on top of each other. A couple of other things to note is that as the sand starts to pile up, you'll flip the tiles over to, or you'll flip the little sand tokens over to a side, which indicates that it is blocked. And if it is a blocked square, people cannot get in or out of that square without digging it up. The other thing to note, I guess, would be that the way you win is by picking up the four machine parts. And the way you find those is by finding there's like two tiles per each part. So you got the propeller, a crystal, an engine, and the one that I can never remember.
Sundial.
Right. Why is there a sundial? Anyway, it's fine. So there are two tiles that correspond to each one of these, and they're going to point to a row or a column. And it's like one is vertical and one is horizontal, and where the two lines would intersect, you plop the piece down. So as you go along, you may find that, oh, I flipped it over and this will tell me where it is. And then another person flips it over and it happens to be on the other side of where anybody is. And so you got to go hoof your ass over there to go pick it up. You may also just find that the storm will just blow everything towards you, which can be, you know, handy sometimes. And the way to win the game is you pick up all four of these pieces and then you get yourself to where the broken shell of this flying machine happens to be. Mm-hmm. You assemble it all together. And once everyone is assembled with all of the pieces, you get to fly off into the sunset and leave the Forbidden Desert behind.
Huzzah.
GTFO.
Yeah, you don't want to die of thirst in a desert. Nobody will ever find you.
It's true. They'll never look for you.
Yeah, so the only other thing I can think of is that there are things like tools that are hanging around which will help you. So sometimes there's like a jetpack which will let you fly around, take people with you. There's a solar shield which helps you to not get obliterated by the sun. And yeah, that's pretty much the how to play. Some of the character abilities are like the water bearer gets more water when you flip over tiles that have water in them. They can also give water a little bit better than other characters. The climber doesn't worry about getting sucked in by the sands. The archaeologist is able to dig a lot better. And the weirdest one, which is the meteorologist, which is basically like a weather sorcerer.
Just like all meteorologists.
He was dope.
The meteorologist is definitely like the craziest one because they are able to look through the deck a certain number of cards from the top and like rearrange them or put some at the bottom. And it's just like, how does this make any sense?
Or just not even draw cards if he doesn't want to.
Yeah, he can spend actions to just like get rid of cards from the stack. It's just like, okay. Anyway, so some of them strain credulity, but you know, it's a game, and it's a fun little mechanic to have lying around.
It's funny that you say that because I think one of the things that stuck out for me in this game was the navigator and how broken the navigator is, in my opinion.
It's really good for getting people around.
The navigator just feels like the dispatcher from Pandemic. It kind of feels that they just took the dispatcher.
There are a lot of parallels, yeah.
I'd say so. And that's fine. It's the same designer. It kind of makes sense.
But it increases greatly. Like it's not like the navigator you know, has four actions and can use those four actions to do a single action for with a different character. The navigator can do three. Like they can move up to three spaces.
Yeah, they can order someone to do that. Yeah.
Like that's bonkers.
Well, that's also why they're really good with combination with the climber, because the climber can just haul somebody with them. So then
yeah,
you just have like two people just running across the map all willy-nilly.
It just seems insanely broken to me. Like, just crazy.
I mean, we still lost half of our games, I think, because we played this twice, right?
We didn't have a navigator the first time. We had the water dude.
We did, yes.
The water bearer or yes. Something. Water. We to be fair, we just for clarity's sake, we randomly dispersed the roles. Like, we didn't pick roles. We just...
Yeah, and so it was the first time we had the one that we... Like, the difference was that, I think, the water carrier. And then the second time, we didn't have the water carrier, but we did have the navigator. And the first time, we lost insanely. Like, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of chance of us...
Well, the first time, we died of thirst with the water carrier. And then the second time we didn't without
correct.
It because we were fast, real fast.
Whoever was the water carrier sure shit didn't do their job, hey?
Ouch.
Let's not start pointing fingers here, Tom.
I don't remember who that was. Was it you, Justin?
I don't think it was me.
No, that was me.
Debbie just wanted to watch us die again.
It didn't carry enough water.
No,
you guys were really far away from me.
That's true. Sometimes you can just have some bad luck.
Well, and I think like even a combination of the water carrier with the navigator is, I think, would probably work really well as kind of for the same reason, because you could literally just carry the water carrier around.
That's very true, yeah.
To water stations, because they're the only ones in the game that can pick up, like after a well has been excavated, only the water carrier can get more water from that site.
That's true.
And so, I mean, put those two together and you have a really good combination as well.
Well, I don't know if he seems to use that kind of class of character in almost all the games. They're always incredibly useful, but it always feels, I don't know, like when you play that character, I always feel I know I'm helping the team. I'm being kind of like, you know, a support element here, but I always kind of feel like my actions are just making everybody else get to do stuff. While I sit there giving everyone's the thumb up.
Yeah, your actions are an extension of everybody.
I never pick that class just because I kind of feel like I don't get to do as much. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Well, I agree. I think that's the quintessential support role where, I mean, you're just that. You're supporting, right? You're not...
Yeah, I mean, like, because the one role I do really like in Forbidden Desert is the climber, because you can't be buried in sand and you can haul somebody with you. So I kind of feel like I can support somebody. I can still bring him with me if they're getting stuck and, you know, bring him through whatever. But then I still have like I kind of feel like I have more agency as that guy, because I can still go somewhere and do something that I want to. I don't know.
The guy seems very strong. I mean, and again, I know, like, go ahead and tweet at me, guys who are listening, if you want to debate this, but it almost feels like, in my opinion, the medic is exceptionally strong in Pandemic. And I feel that the climber is exceptionally strong in Forbidden Desert. But I mean, you know, again, like I'm sure that each has their own role, kind of has their own strengths. It's just those ones, I don't know, for whatever reason, the medic in Pandemic and the climber in Forbidden Desert, both just like they just stand out to me as just being a little overtuned. Again, just my thoughts.
Oh, it's interesting. I think it's interesting that we all kind of have a different, like we've mentioned three different classes now that we think are kind of broken.
If they all seem broken, then it's probably fine. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
that's the weird thing, right?
They're all equally broken in their own way.
Yeah, because I mean, if they don't have an equivalent of like just a civilian or something like that to really make this game super hard, you know, just a guy.
just a dude.
No special abilities.
Yeah, we have the rock climber, the water bearer, the meteorologist, aka the weather wizard, and Jim. Yeah. What's Jim's special ability? You know.
We were lifting off and he was delivering some food and he accidentally got stuck in the landing gear and now he's here.
Yeah, totally.
Brought the skip the dishes driver with us?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jim, the skip the dishes driver.
Man, so that's why my pad thai took forever to get here.
Oh, at least we're still hot.
Maybe he's like really good at driving and it just doesn't do him any good in a desert. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I got to believe that Matt LeCocq knows what he's doing. So I think all of the specialties have their own like fun little way of working. And I think, like you said, it really matters how you want to play. And so,
right.
I mean, if you want to make it harder on yourself, you can always just like pick shit that doesn't work well together, or don't pick the ones that you feel are broken and stuff like that. I think co-op games are great like that because you can agree to just make things more difficult on yourselves. You can also I've played this a few times and I think I've only won, like I win like half the time, but we're usually playing on the easier side of things. So drawing fewer cards off the start and.
You know, you're absolutely correct when you say that. Like, and you know, and I was thinking about that while you were talking. Is like, I mean, we still got absolutely trounced in that one game where everything, like the thing about this game, which I find super interesting, and I actually kind of like it, is everything can go so well, and then all of a sudden, it just like the switch gets flipped and it's downhill.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's just like, oh, the storm's not going anywhere because all the cards you draw just shove into a corner. And then all of a sudden it's zipping across the map. By the time your turn, you're stuck under five piles of sand and you don't know how to get out.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just getting, you know, and you're just getting slammed with, you know, buried under sand dunes. And you're like, man, you know, we've only found one piece of this godforsaken airship. And you know, we don't know where the landing or the launch pad or landing pad or whatever the hell you want to call it, the airport strip is, you know.
I think it's just the landing pad.
Whatever. Like, you know, as we need to get the hell out of here and, you know, things are starting to really ramp up and, you know, and God damn it, I'm thirsty. And so where's our water bearer?
Rude.
The water bear is busy exploring. Get your own damn water.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, I think that one big piece about this game, right, is that you can have all the intentions in the world of going towards somebody, but the storm can push you away or separate you or push the other person away.
Or put a mountain of sand between the two of you.
Yeah, I mean, you can aim for, you know, that person, but Because the tiles are constantly moving based on a random card flip, you have no idea in the end what's going to happen, right? And you could get separated very quickly from your group. I felt that's what happened when I was playing the water dude, whatever, because I had to try to get to the well to get extra water to get to the other players. And once I got to the well, everybody else got moved away from me. And it was like, okay, wait a second. Like, now I've just made it that much harder. And I can't actually give that much water anymore. And so it's another one of those games where it's like, you can have all the strategy you want and you can have all the intentions you want. But I mean, the randomness of the cards is going to do something sooner or later.
Sometimes the storm has a will of its own, a will that won't let you proceed.
But that's why you need the Sky Wizard.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's how meteorologists work.
I think there's one other thing from my point of view that's notable to bring up, and that's on the cards, when you're looking at your thirst level. This game is very odd to me in the sense that once you hit zero, you're not dead. You have to go past zero. And so, you know, like you're looking at the schematic on your card, right? And it shows you the number of water kind of levels you have. And it shows you that you go, you know, like 3, 2, 1, 0, and then there's a skull. But even though it's on that card in front of you, you mentally, you're like, when I hit zero, I'm dead. And then you're like, oh, wait a second. I got another turn.
Yeah, I think that the card is representing, well, I mean, think. I pretty much know that the card is representing how much water you have left. So it's like, you have one water left. You have no water left. And if you need to drink some water, you're done. You know? It's just not super intuitive, I guess, based on a lot of the other games and the way that a lot of other games are designed and that sort of stuff. It's usually like 3, 2, 1 dead, right? Whereas this one's 3, 2, 1, 0 dead. It's just a weird kind of nuance.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. That's the way I think. Like, I know I've seen this in other games and it's the way I think. But as our first playthrough shows, the way I think doesn't always line up with everyone else.
Do you want to go ahead and explain what happened?
In the game, when you draw the storm cards, it gives you a circle or a square and it gives you a direction. So, and in the manual, it tells you that the center square, that's the eye of the storm, and it's moving around. So what I was doing was I drew the card and it said, okay, the storm moves 2 spaces right. So I moved the blank square 2 spaces right and then pushed the other 2 tiles to fill in that blank. And everyone around the digital table gave me a digital eyebrow raise and thought that I was insane.
Well, I was thinking about this afterwards. Okay. On the card that you flip, looks like, because it's like little squares, right?
Yeah.
Are drawn squares out and they're moved. And so to me, if you're drawing the square, you're drawing an object, which is the square, which is on the board, and that's what has to get moved.
Yeah.
And so I just like, I think the I think the thought process is odd, but I feel like the cards like show you which way to move the cards. And if you're moving the storm, it's the opposite of what
it's showing you which way to move the storm.
No, it's not.
The storm is a metaphysical square. It's just another square. You just can't see it.
What?
I think this is like some sort of one of those weird like perception differences that people have. And I'm sure there's going to be people that agree with you. And there's going to be people on the other side. The comment I made was like, I don't think that somebody would design a game for an 8-year-old saying the eye of the storm moves, so let's move the empty space around. Like, that just doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know. That it does. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
No.
Tweet me if you know I'm right.
Well, and I think one thing that Tom said while we were playing the game, which was very accurate and really should be kind of thought about, is regardless of which way you play, as long as it's the same, the entire way through, it doesn't matter. So whether you whether you have the opinion of you're moving the storm or you have the opinion of you're moving the tiles, doesn't matter. As long as you're doing it the same, then, I mean, it's just a mirror image, right? And so it shouldn't make a difference. I don't think that when they created the game, I don't think that they made the options in that deck specifically thinking it only works moving this direction.
That's very true.
Thinks that it has symmetry, and so it shouldn't matter. So we'll give you an out on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I think you said that Board Game Geek, there's people that agreed with you when you looked it up.
You look on the internet, you're going to find someone that agrees with you.
Yeah. But we were at length. We were discussing this when we were playing the game because Thomas and I are very like, huh?
Like, what?
How could you possibly think that way?
I don't know. It just seems so clear.
You think that when they made the game that they would have made a tile that had like a pictogram of the eye of a hurricane or something.
I actually was looking through Board Game Geek and through the images just to find stuff for the review. And a lot of people have made Lego storm blocks.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Okay.
Adam's on board.
There we go.
No, I like the idea of a storm block, but I mean, then you just jump the but then it totally screws up with the movement of the tiles, but yes. Yeah,
it's visually nice but does make moving things around a little more awkward.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to lift it up, shuffle the two tiles, and then put the storm block down in the new open space. I mean, it's still kind of a neat, you know, like everyone knows at this point, I mean, I'm a huge components guy. I love components. I love seeing the bling, you know, in a board game kind of idea. No. And that one, you know, that one tickles me for sure.
I like that this game comes with a big chunky plastic airship. You don't need it.
No,
it serves no purpose.
It serves zero purpose whatsoever.
But all the other components do fit inside the airship, which is great. So you can put the little sundial on there. You can shove the little engine in its hole, put the power crystal in there. It's great.
I think when we had the physical copy, we had a really hard time getting it together.
Sure, but that's also probably just from lack of actually finding the pieces because you keep getting trounced by the game. You know, so that's really just the game's giving you the beat down. That's all.
Yeah, but it is nice when you get like just little, they're just little fun little elements. You don't need them. But I guess even with a miniatures game, technically you don't need any of the miniatures.
Oh, but
you
they could sure play are
Warhammer
nice,
man. With Pogs
they sure are
if
nice.
You wanted to.
Yeah, sure.
Ooh. Now there. Now that's really dating myself.
But I've got all this money and I need to blow it on something.
That's right.
Plastic. Yeah,
I can't keep throwing it in my fireplace.
I need to be down a couple $1,000 in about 10 minutes, please.
Oh, well, welcome to Games Workshop. Do I have a deal for you?
Welcome to our sister site, Forge World. Would you like a Titan?
Totally.
I think one other thing that can be said is so when you move the storm, the tiles that move, you increase the sand on them. One thing I thought was intelligent, nice, whatever you want to call it, is a single layer of sand is a light color. And the second you put a second layer of sand on it, it's considered blocked. And you flip the tile over and it's actually a darker color.
With an X.
Yeah. Yes. And so it's a very visually easy kind of way to see. If you're physically playing the game, I mean, when you have two tiles under there, you know, it's easy to kind of look and be like, oh, there's only one there. But when you kind of get to seven, it's hard to miss. But it's that difference between one tile, like one layer and two layers. They've made it relatively easily recognizable that there's that kind of that difference. So I think that's kind of a notable thing as well.
Yeah, everything in the game is like really visually appealing as well. Like they've done a good job in making sure that, you know, everything looks cool.
All the art on the tiles really nice.
Makes you feel like you're in the middle of a desert. It's very nice.
It's a little stressful. Like the game itself is a little stressful.
Hey, deserts can be quite beautiful.
When you have water.
When you have water. I mean, they can still be beautiful, just deadly.
Touché.
Yeah, so for me, I guess like this game is fun. It's pretty simple. Like I think it's on the lower end of complexity for games that I've tried. It's certainly a good introduction to co-op games, I think. Like I have a lot of different stuff lying around, and this one is, you know, it's very approachable. You can explain it to someone reasonably quickly. it's got a theme that I think everybody kind of can get behind. Like, you're digging for stuff in a desert. You know, it's you're an archaeologist, kind of getting some Indiana Jones vibes from it, although with like less shooting people and riding on trains, I guess. This game is good. I think it's probably not one that I'm going to go out and get, because again, I have a ton of stuff. I already have Forbidden Island, which I don't think I play very much, but it is a fun game. I'll never turn a round down, because a lot of its strengths are its simplicity, its approachability, it's very fast, like it's a quick game to play. And it's fun. It's a neat little puzzle. You know, Matt LeCocq knows what he's doing when he's making co-op games. And so I think I would recommend this for someone who doesn't really, you know, my recommendation is basically that if this is going to be an entry into your or somebody else's co-op experience, like, I think this is probably a good place to start in that sort of vein, because it is a fun little game. I think what kills it for me is that, for me personally, is that it's like on the lower end of the complexity. I don't think there's not a ton of depth. So like more and more rounds will start to suffer from diminishing returns. I don't know that there's any like expansions, although you could probably argue that the other two games are probably like where you would go if you wanted to refresh the sort of system on it. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, it's not for me, because it's probably not, you know, I'm so high on myself or whatever, but like it doesn't have a lot of legs, but I think if you're the kind of person who is maybe getting into it, it's probably a good one to pick up. You know, it's good. I always have fun with it. And yeah, a lot of unnecessarily nice stuff, like the metal box, the art's great, and then you got the cool airship that you can play with. So, I mean, I might come around on it, depending on how well my kids start to pick up board games. It might be one that I decide to pick up on a whim, you know, if I find that maybe Forbidden Island isn't doing it for me, it might be something that I do go out and give a shot, because I think it's one that's pretty readily available. It's, you know, like I said, quick and easy to understand. So, I mean, you never know. I just can't see for myself if I didn't have the family, it'd probably be a hard no, just on account of the 300 other games that I have. But like, I could see myself picking this up if we were hanging out at Toys R Us and, you know, see it on the shelf and it was there. I might do an impulse buy on it sometime, because it is quite good. Justin.
Yeah, I echo a lot of those same thoughts, where it is definitely one of the games that I recommend to people just starting out in board games. I've recommended to a few family members with like grandkids and stuff that, you know, want something to do with the grandkid when they're over. So it is a really great game for just kind of starting that co-op feel. I've played it a whole bunch. I don't actually own it, but I've bought it for other people. And yeah, it's good. It's a great, fun, easy to learn co-op game. And I think co-op games can be a really great way to get into the board gaming hobby, because it allows everyone to kind of learn and progress together. You don't feel like you're getting to get stomped on because you're new to the game. You know, it's good camaraderie, and then you can kind of get used to how the mechanics of a lot of board games are very similar, and you can kind of just kind of get into that headspace, and then kind of go into a more competitive game if you want, or hey, just stick with co-op games. They're a lot of fun. You do you. So I would definitely recommend this if you are looking for a nice, light, but still hard co-op game. Plays really well 2 to, I don't know, I'd say 4. You can play up to 5, but you might get a little lost in that. And yeah, I don't own it myself, but I have a few other preferred co-op games at this point. So my table and my closet space is full. But yeah, if you're looking for a good, solid co-op game, go get it. You won't go wrong with this one. What do you think, Debbie?
I think I mirror a lot of what you guys say. You know, I could be totally off when I say this, but I think in my eyes, kind of sometimes where you can find this game speaks to its approachability and its entry-levelness. That's not a word. I don't know.
It is now.
But it is now, right. So, but the fact that you can find this kind of game in Toys R Us, like Walmart, Target, things like that, in my eyes, that speaks to kind of the more simplistic mechanisms behind it. And I think you find them the much more approachable games in that way, because these are kind of your typical everyday people that are going to be picking up these games. Your hobby board gamers are usually not going to be going to their, you know, local massive chain department store. Yeah. To find a board game, right? Like that's not where a lot of us go. And so I think that that just kind of speaks to its level of complexity and its approachability. I think it's a good game to have in your back pocket to bring out when you have people over that maybe aren't gamers. And you just kind of want to have a little bit of fun, because it is funny. I mean, and it is, what's the word? Like it does make you nervous, because you're like, you're trying to get out. And as you see the sand build and as you see the tiles you're on moving around, you know, it kind of, it brings up your adrenaline level. And so it allows for that kind of, you know, joyous, lighthearted, you know, let's have a drink, let's eat some snacks, and just kind of shoot the breeze. It allows for that. And so it's not a bad game to have in your back pocket. It's just not a game that I think you would be pulling out when you're a group like us, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, yeah, the four of us are...
Damn casuals.
Yeah. The four of us are a little beyond that, right? And so this isn't, you know, if you're the kind of person where you have a group of gamers and you're looking to add to your library, this is not what you're looking for. But if you're a kind of person that has, you know, a light collection and you have those family members that come over and you want to play a game with them, or those friends that, you know, they aren't gamers, but you want to kind of, you know, have a fun night with them, then this is a perfect game for that. It's super small, compact, easily can go anywhere with it. There's not a whole lot of small bits in it that I can remember. Maybe one of the pieces on the ship is not, I think, a little on the smaller side, but there's nothing wrong with this game. I can't knock it. It's just not, like you guys said, it's just not kind of at our level. So I give it a 4. If you get the chance to play it, absolutely do it, because it is honestly, it's fun. And you'll have a good time, and you probably need to play it more than once, because you'll probably eat shit the first time. Sorry.
But, you will die of thirst.
Yeah. At like, least once. You know, but once you've played it 3 times, you're probably kind of done. Or you need to play it maybe once a year, and then you'll be all right. So, it's a 4 out of 5. Like I said, there's not a lot I can knock about it. It's just not kind of at that level for me. Adam.
Man, like you guys have really kind of hit on a lot of my talking points as well. I agree. I think this game's great. It's a little light for my particular tastes. And by a little, I mean a lot light. Like this game is even like it's even lighter than Pandemic. And I mean, I know a lot of people are gonna be like, oh, Pandemic's like medium weight, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Like this game is pretty goddamn light. And in my opinion, Pandemic is reasonably light as well. At the same time, I still enjoy it. I still enjoy it. I still think it's a great game. I still think it's worth picking up. I would definitely, I don't have any kids, but putting myself in like Tom's situation, I would definitely try this with kids. I think that it's that the concepts are easily enough approachable, especially with like a parent to kind of take care of the storm action and that sort of stuff. I mean, it really is the game will absolutely womp you out of nowhere a couple times. And I think that that's almost one of the things that I enjoy about it, is that it's just like, you know, you think everything's kosher, and then all of a sudden, nope. You know,
now you're under 8 feet of sand, yeah. Motherfucker.
Yeah, now storm. You're under 8 feet of sand, and you have no water left, and the sun's about to beat down again, and it's fun. Like it's a fun game. It just like I said, I would like more of it, whether that means an expansion or a different game or something like that. This is the first Forbidden that I've played. I've played it a handful of times now, a couple times before this play session, and then now. So I've never played Forbidden Island, and I've never played Forbidden Sky, which are the other two in the line. I'd like to. I'd really like to at this point. This game has left me wanting to know more, which is a good sign. It's something that I, you know, you walk away from it and a couple days later you're thinking about it again. You're like, yeah, I could go for some more of that. Like, yeah, let's do it. Putting a number attached to it. I mean, I give it a 7.5. And again, that's really, this is my own kind of personal tastes on it. It really just feels too light for me. I want something with a little bit more meat. I want something with a little bit more weight to it. But this game is wonderful and could easily be brought out in many situations with many levels of casual, semi-casual, never played a board game before kind of gamers. Like it's a really an all sorts sort of game.
Like the licorice candies, all sorts?
Except I really don't like those, so this is much better than the licorice candies.
Okay, and neither do I. That's what I was hoping.
Yeah, I'm not a huge black licorice person, and then you put like some gummy stuff over it, and I just, you know, it just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, you really gotta get the salty licorice. Oof. Is the best.
Yes.
No. Yes. No, black licorice is disgusting.
You're disgusting.
That's besides the point.
Those are my people you're talking about.
If you enjoyed this episode, for some reason that you enjoyed all of the random tangents, you can help us out by sharing this with a friend, liking and subscribing on Apple or Google or whatever your thing is. If you want to really help us out, you can always leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Is sort of the going de facto major review system as far as I'm aware. I could be wrong. Tweet at me, whatever. If you want to get a hold of us, you can hit us up on Twitter at CGS Podcast or use the collapsinggameshelf@gmail.com email. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can always hit me up at Team Rage Tom. And, you know, ask me a question or tell me how I'm wrong about the whole Eye of the Storm thing. And I'll throw it over to Debbie.
All right. You guys can get me at Mrs. Wynn. That's at MRSWHYN on Twitter and Instagram. And obviously, as Tom said, at CGS Podcast on Twitter, we want to hear what you guys think, what you like, what you don't like, any suggestions you guys have, any of that constructive criticism. We want to know what you guys want to hear and what you like. We're here to help you guys out just as much as we're here to get through our own collections. So, you know, shoot us a line, let us know, and we'll get back to you or something.
or something.
Maybe.
I don't know where I was going with that.
It's all right.
Exactly.
Debbie might tweet at you.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'll think about it. Justin.
Well, yeah. If you want to reach me, you can find me on Twitter at Don't Trust Justin. Please let me know how you think the storm should move. And I should really put the storm as my Twitter image. Just feeling really connected to the storm right now. So if you think that the storm moves or that the land moves around the storm, you just let me know. What do you think, Adam?
Well, I think that would be a good tweet for you to put up, and you'd be like it if the storm moves, retweet it if the sand or if the tiles move, and then you would just get your answer right there. People can go to at Don't Trust Justin and click the appropriate thing and cast your votes. That's what I think. But if you want to get in contact with me, and if you want to, you know, not talk about whether the storm or the sand moves, you can find me on all social media platforms at For The Win. That's FORTHEWHYN. You can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/ForTheWin. I'm live Wednesday through Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. Usually starting off some Animal Crossing. The game has me hooked. It's all bad. I'm trying to cross all the animals. Some of them don't want to cross. It's terrible. also, I've had a few people on Twitter and various other outlets ask me or us about, because we do this podcast about tabletop board gaming, do we also do like tabletop role playing? And to that, I say not on this podcast yet, but I have gotten together with my D&D group, which we play on Wednesdays, and we've started streaming on Twitch, and we now have our very own Twitch channel. So if you want to come check out some D&D Wednesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, you can check us out on twitch.tv/adventurestabletop, A-D-V-E-N-T-U-R-E-R-S, tabletop, adventures, tabletop, all one word. Come check out some D&D. That's it. That's what I got.
Booyah.
Yeah. So, join us for that. I'm one of the people on that. So if you for some reason haven't gotten tired of my voice, you can hear more on Wednesdays.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, thank you again for listening. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we're going to be back at you with something fun next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.